that authenticity and of the true motivation and the ultimate direction. We have called to the meeting to consider the the first draft of oversight report and the I don't think that will be in the ministry because we have that too. I don't see us for it. Unless it's the authority of another commission. And then the consideration of the lesson program of 2015. We already have received apologies from Mr. Mbele, Mr. Daga, Mr. Olive, and the Minister. So those are the four apologies. I will accept you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Apologies. We will move to item consideration of draft oversight report. We have the report here in front of us, and I will give an opportunity for us to read the report. We can spend about 30 minutes on the first one. And 15 minutes on the second one. The second one is a visit to Airport Company of South Africa, and the first one is a visit to Prague. But I'll also ask the committee secretary to ensure that the report, the draft of the report, is done within that 10. We are here considering a report of something that happened in July. I'm 62 years old. I wonder if I can still remember everything that happened in July. So we should not be considering reports for the sake of getting them through as a process. We undertake oversight for purposes of identifying the progress that we are making in terms of government policies, as well as the challenges that are related to the implementation of our government policies. And we also do that in order to influence the budget and also change on the course of action. Now, if we consider a report of an oversight after the midterm expenditure framework and also after all the parties have drafted their elections manifesto, it means that whatever we came across will not be considered maybe in the next 5 years if there was a need to change the course of action. So, all that I'm saying is that an oversight is not just an oversight for the sake of fulfilling the budget, that we have the budget to spend on oversight. And oversight is meant to identify key issues. First, the progress that we are making, is it in line with the policies, the progress in terms of speed, and also the impact of what we are doing on the ground in relation to the challenges identified, as well as the gaps that would require a change of action. So it is very, very important that we produce our oversight report within the month or two after the oversight. It can't be this month or two after. Are we in agreement with the fact that we are going to spend 10 minutes on the first report and then 15 minutes on the second one? Okay.
On page 3, Chapter 3, on that paragraph, on the first one, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth line, the benefits of the system are reduced number of single failures. I'm not sure that is quite correct. The benefits of the scheme are reduced number. Did you say that? I was trying to think of it as a sentence so that it's more additive. The benefits of the system have been reduced or is reduced. And I'm saying a reduced number of single failures.
Prefer that they will become more explicit in terms of at what stage is phase one and when will phase two be implemented and when would an improved service be realized so that we become very specific to say what are the expected end results, where are we in terms of the implementation process. But also in this particular one, we are not saying how many job opportunities came as a result of this project, including the skills transfer, if that can be included in that. The same would apply to the Western Cape.
Also, all the negotiations with students were completed. Now, what does the state need to tell us what this is about? If you just say negotiations with Siemens were completed, which are those negotiations? That's the only one. Just to qualify that so that any person who reads this will find the expression that there were negotiations related to business. That is complete attention.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wasn't able to attend these particular oversights, so I can't comment on what has actually been written from point of view of accuracy. I take it that, you know, it has been carefully compiled, and I'm sure it would have been with a very full delegation, so that's not my concern. What I would have liked to have seen, though, and I think anyone, even if they didn't attend, would have liked to have seen, a number of these projects are in stages, and many of the stages are complete. For example, the Kuspoort Depot first stage complete, because there's phase one. And there are others. A lot of money has been spent. Is there any way that we could augment the report by perhaps commenting on the work that has been completed and compare that to the original budget so we can get an idea whether these projects are coming in on budget and whether in fact taxpayers are getting value for the money? Because I think it's a good report and it has got a lot of detail, but that's the one bit of detail that I personally would have liked to have seen, is are these projects expressing cost overruns? If so, how much, or are they coming under budget, in which case we can say everything is going smoothly from a financial point of view. Quite a lot of work has been done on the actual transport aspects and the qualitative aspects. Comment is made now and again on that. But I think a financial aspect might be good if that could be included. I don't know whether it's still possible, but I just put on the table for the committee's consideration.
I think that your comments are good in the sense that we would then use that information as a follow-up in our interaction with the Auditor General report, because there is no way in which we can make an assessment of the impact of the financial resources until such time that we put your comments here in terms of the need for us to make an assessment on the value for money, but also make that as a recommendation moving forward to say, in our engagement with the auditor report, we would then need to reduce the fees to ascertain whether there was value for money, and also to assess as to whether the projects as they were under budgeted or over budgeted. I think the value is cost, but during that visit, we could not make that assessment, because that assessment is actually made through the Auditor General. So you can then put that as an issue that you would like to follow up, using this very same report in engaging with the Auditor General on those particular projects.
Also, the value for money normally will come under the quarterly reports. When we do quarterly reports in terms of the financial oversight, when the department comes to present, and I think usually the program, it is catered for those quarterly reports to check the impact. Otherwise, this is a generic statement in terms of the impact of the finances, whether is it under, over, or is it shortfall in terms of the spending patterns.
Chair, the course of the figure is quite great. I don't know whether there were any quarterly reports covering aspects of the work regarding some of these projects that already would have been published. But even if that were not the case, I think it might be helpful to the committee when we do for perhaps even on the same site, have those quarterly reports with us. So if there is a massive overrun, we can actually see rather than being told why there is an overrun. And if by the same token the project is coming in on budget as informed to us by the quarterly report, we can check that in fact haven't been corners cut and we're still getting the same quality in the original specification. I just think it would empower us a lot more if we have some financial information, whether time or later, as one of us points out. But these projects run for several years, many of them. There must be some quarterly reports at some stage that at least talk to what's really happened. And that's my plea, just that we arm ourselves with that, and then we better empower to make good decisions and know what we're looking at. And of course, it's far better to go out there, which is why we do these oversight visits, and see what we're getting rather than be told about it here. And I think the both of things doubles the value we bring to the process.
I totally agree with that, we should include the issue of financial in relation to the project that's being implemented, and also in relation to the value for money, and also then say, as part of our findings on this particular one, that the committee could not, because we did not get that information during that visit. That is our finding, that we did not get that information. However, we are then saying we would need that information as part of the quarterly report from the department and the entities, as well as part of the Auditor General, so that we can then in future use that information to make an informed assessment of what needs to be done. Are we in agreement with that? Are we happy with that? Okay. Then on the Western Cape one, also for me what is missing is the job opportunities, the skills transfer, as well as what you said about the big project is that it is a modernized signaling system. It will reduce the number of signaling failures, and reduce the train delays and cancellation due to signaling failure. What we are not being taught is all those problems are caused by two things. The first one is that the signaling system in South Africa has been eroded. There have been no investment in the railway infrastructure for a number of years. But secondly, there is debt on and copper cables. Now, what doesn't come out yet in the report is whether the cables are of a nature that they will not be solid, like the optic fiber cables. Because it would make no difference if there is investment, but they are still investing on the same type of cables that get stolen. So if we can be explicit on that. The same also applies to all the projects that was the issue of this signaling. On page 4. For me, on the first paragraph, on line, the third line from the bottom, the first paragraph. Challenges raised by staff included cable theft and lightning, which interferes with the functioning of the system. The team was confident that these challenges would be addressed by the new signaling system. Okay. But I don't understand who is the team. And any person who reads this report must not know who is the team. Because here, we are talking of the committee, and we are talking of TRASA. Then if there is a staff for the TRASA that is raising this issue, who was the team there? And under the Transnet, the second paragraph from the bottom, Transnet Rail Engineering says that it was ready to play its role. I think we need to change the grammar itself. And on page 5.
Also, in the second of where you're duplicating, I think underlying this issue of a factory in Greenfield, that's a major step, you know, intention. It cannot be undermined because the output of it is the creation of job on this one. Although it does not come strongly from many jobs because they have been reduced from 1,700 to 800. But in the application, in building this factory in Greenfield, surely it will alleviate some of the unemployment or some of the challenges of unemployment that are confronting. So I want us to flag that as a major step and should monitor that because it's the first commitment to say you are going to put a factory. We should simply
on page 5 for the same, taking the whole issue about China, is that central to the relationship between Transnet and TRASA in terms of refurbishing of our locomotives and coaches is what is in the National Development Plan. If we can just uplift it up. The need for building the capacity of state-owned companies to make the resources rotate within the state. Now, if you read this report, it doesn't relate to the National Development Plan's objective of building the capacity of state-owned companies, and also it does not reflect to the recommendations made by the portfolio committee after a study sought to China. Although in the beginning the report talk about the study sought to China and the observations and the recommendations. But when it comes to where we need to be seen as happening, the relationship between Transnet and Trava, it falls short of that. It doesn't give that connection. Although there is work that is being done by Transnet or Trava, one, it indicates that there isn't both companies have not sat down to look at what the NDP directs them to do. They have also not seriously looked at what are the recommendations of the Governing Committee on Transport in as far as building the capability of the state companies. And therefore, in our recommendation, I read our recommendation, the recommendation is talking about that, but it is not uplifted here. So, both Transnet and Trava need to look at using this particular project to build the capacity of state-owned companies informed by the National Development Plan and also in line with the recommendations of the Portfolio Committee on Transport on a visit to China and the Chinese model.
Just also, I'm not sure on the same type of chair because I wanted it. You see, where there is progress, we need to commend the department or the state objectives in as far as the human agenda that we employ for this entity. It should be standalone. So that you also highlight very clearly the issue of the concern of the community. You know, for instance, this issue of having more fuel technicians, other trains, it's quite good. But a concern about those that are not absorbed, where do they go? Because if they are not able to absorb them, so there's a challenge. So the second one is this issue of the slowness or the slow pace at which Trava is refurbishing is written in the coaches. Oh, yes. So I'm saying those two should also be standalone so that the work that they are doing vis-a-vis there where they can improve should also come very clear. Otherwise, I would say let's commend that, those two.
But also I would recommend that when it comes to the benefits, we must have a subheading that says benefits, and then we point at the benefit one, benefit two, benefit three. But when it comes to the Trava and Transnet, what was raised by Trava was that they would have loved to give more to Transnet. But Transnet's capacity and quantity of work is what is preventing that relationship from happening. So there has to be a better understanding from the side of Transnet that they are a state-owned entity and they would be a preferred service provider if we are following the Chinese model and the NDP direction in terms of building the capacity of state-owned companies. However, that objective can only be realized if Transnet is able to play its role effectively. Currently they are not. That is what the Trava was saying. Say, as much as the NDP is directing us as state-owned companies to work with one another and build our internal capacity, Transnet doesn't have the capacity to provide us with that the debt service. The quality of the courses that are produced, okay, is inferior to the quality of the courses that are produced by union members.
Where it says committee expressed concern that although 12 cameras were operating, visual information was only available for a few. I think we must just comment and appreciate and then raise the challenge on these two masks because that's a huge project, this issue of cameras. We commend and appreciate, but there is a shortcoming of the cameras, only from a few. That's my approach to personal attendance.
I would want us to come back to this program. I would want us to come back to the introduction phase of this business, which would include the issues you are raising on our report. We sometimes forget that the FAFA started to operate in 2009, and the amount of work that has been done by FAFA within 4.5 years is enormous. If you compare the number of years of the existence of PASA and when PASA actually got the budget to do its work. In 2009, PASA was still raising a red flag to say we are seeking. They were only giving the budget after we had been to China, and we went to China in July. In actual fact, when they raised the flag, they forced us to undertake a study tour to China, and we went to China in 2010. And after that, we then came back to recommend that the issues that have been raised by PASA need to be addressed. And PASA then got the budget that they needed. And if you look at the pay and the speed at which they have responded to all the issues, they need to be commended. Right in the beginning or at the end of it all. Having observed all these things, we are therefore praising PASA for the work that they have done within the short space of time. But also I would want to ask to be very explicit in saying only on the same center that the owner was talking about, although 200 cameras were operating, visual information was only available for a few. Now, to me, that sentence would either mean that other cameras were not working, or it would mean that in the room, the control room where we were in, we could only see a few. If that can be explained, because I don't remember a situation where we were told that the cameras are not working.
That's what Chairperson, maybe I said, let's comment. If the challenge is for those that have not been shown, a few, let's put them also in the context. But you should not say that those 200 cameras aren't working. Because we show people we identify a corner there where a person was standing for quite some time, I think even Honorable Onis, what about the chef who's standing here? So they said, oh, he's waiting for a train that will come at a particular time. So I'm saying maybe for those few issues or legal issues, we can put it in that way that it is not as if the lower gun has moved towards the camera. Because all of them are operational. Maybe the scope, I'm not sure. We can go back and just ask more of this so that we are correct. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Kupu.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I also actually want to ask a question about the cameras. I didn't understand that sentence either, but you anticipated my question in that regard. Presumably this report is written by, would it have been the committee doc or one of our researchers? Surely it can be difficult to find out what he or she actually meant there. I mean, I take it that's the case. And then the other point is the under 6.2, the passengers blaming lack of communication from Barso didn't know the train was an express train. I've just come back from United Kingdom during the December break, and I travelled a lot on public transport there. And it's hard to understand, with modern technology being as cost efficient as it is now, that we can't have something similar. And when, for example, you travel by bus or by train, even the underground, when any bus or train or tube pulls up, the public addresses and says, this is the train to whatever, Stansted or Step, you know, Stanmore or whatever, and it says where those topping all stations are. And then when you get in the train, it reminds you. Before you put in the next station, and say, the next station is in John's Wood, and we'll continue the journey to Stanmore. Right? And then when it stops, before it leaves, it says, you can't get confused. And it would seem to me that it's fairly simple technology, and simply having a system whereby the public address system is linked to real-time explanation where the trains are. Now, why can't we have this on our bigger platform, in our biggest train stations? And clearly it would be a challenge because we need a lot of official languages being used, but it's not a lot of information, and one could keep it fairly short and have as many official languages as possible. I don't really understand why something which is not rocket science is not standardized. When you look at the billion that we're spending here, this is a very, very small part of the overall budget, simply to inform the passenger space. And I wonder whether the committee made any observations in that regard, and whether PRASA have committed to something like that.
This conversation took place between ourselves and PRASA, and when we then, in the same train, there were PRASA staff members and management, and they responded to some of the issues that they have installed the system, and announcements have been made. And they are also looking at the system where the cell phone, there would be information, like there is information about load shed that we all get. Okay. And they responded to say that they are also working on that type of information where the information will come through a cell phone of an individual to indicate whether the train is delayed or whatever. But that person was actually asked by myself, because he was a student. And then he said he doesn't look at whether the train is written express or whatever, he just gets into the train. Okay. Which is why my next comment on this particular issue is the role played by the United Commuters Voice. Because on the next paragraph, it is said that the United Commuters Voice also voiced what they are unhappy about, and they have an MOU with PRASA, and their role is to educate commuters. Now, our visit did not include a visit to United Commuters Voice offices or to look at the progress that they are providing in training commuters. And as a result, we cannot then make an assessment or have our observations in relation to the work that is being done by the United Commuters Voices, because if there is an MOU and the United Commuters Voices is funded by PRASA to educate commuters because they come from the community, then this issue also of the commuters being aware has to be played also by those organizations that are representing communities who are funded by PRASA to do that work on behalf of Zimbabwe. Like the issue of cable theft. Cable theft are done by communities, and also the banning of trains is done by communities. And if these organizations are funded by grants, and they are saying they are educating commuters, from where I think I would want to understand what is it that they are educating commuters, and what is the impact of that in building a good relationship between the commuters and the citizens in France.
Chairperson, still on the issue of communication, given what the honourable member says, in our journey, I train and interacting with the commuters on the train, especially the workers, the matter of course, I could not also understand because of how to, because these trains have their own way of communicating with the commuters as well as in the station and so on. And also they're coming from the end, which to me there are two different types of things that are running there. And apparently one train, the other train, either matter what was reduced in terms of the number of trains running on the train. And there was an express train which does not stop in all these stations. And the community are complaining about that to say, look, if you are going to have a change in the manner in which you manage trains, on a particular day, please tell us so that we don't jump into a wrong train and it moves and it does not stop in all these stations that where we used to stop, especially referring to domestic workers. I think that this matter comes from that angle, not necessarily on the technology in terms of train by train and so on, because it's a long period there, because there are many small stations in between, you remember. So there were complaints of completing was coming from that point. To an extent that I know every morning before 7, in other stations, they do announce that this thing will be on time, Cape Town will be on time, there will be delay and so on. And besides that one, it was around this issue of reducing the pain, not making it available and having a spare frame and not stopping. So he said, please complete with us so that we have other arrangements. I just want to bring that in check.
We were saying that we were on an express train, but in that express train, there were also passengers who got that air. It is a train that stopped in some of the stations. And then the issue that they were raising was that Transa should, one, have a good communication system that will give it to them that this is an express train. And in that coach again, there were passengers who were saying, Mina, I know that this is an express train. And another student that I was talking to was saying, Mina, I didn't know that this is an express train. I just jumped in and I have missed my train station. The train station, it means that I am going to alight on the next train station and wait for the train that takes me back. Or I have to go and get a taxi to take me to the campus because of the class that I need to attend. Which is why also this is also linked to the one ticketing system, where if you miss your train or your train is late, you can then use the same ticket and catch a bus. Whereas currently, if you are using, there are different ticketing systems. So you are compelled, which is where the frustration and the banning of trains comes from. Okay. If the train is late, and I can say that I am late either for an interview, or for my doctor's appointment, or for my exam paper, I then get frustrated because I bought a train ticket which I cannot use taking a bus or taking a taxi. That is what was being said. And we are all correct that for a person who is reading this, who was even us who were there, we can say that it is not clear as to what is it that we want to say.
So,
Before I leave, can I say something?
I didn't.
I'm leaving. I'm supposed to go to Juliet. The airport is leaving at 4 o'clock outside. We're attending other events at Captain Patrol.
Express
Park. Captain, there's something that is missing. Maybe on the last paragraph of 6.3, this is into Park Station. We are supposed to put that the other achievement that say when we are in the Park Station, if you're willing to go to Gautrain, you can't go outside. You rather use the lift to go to Gautrain. It's easy to use it like that.
The information that is missing on this paragraph is the integrated transport system, because it has happened in that bus station that day. You can alight from a metro rail and just use the desk and then go and take a house train or any other thing. And also on the same paragraph, what we observe is that the stations are actually being turned into commercial centers to have outlets where you can trade and to have accommodation where people can stay. You can have outlets, you can have office parks at the train stations, and you can also have residential flats at the station, which is what is also the model that we saw in China that all the train stations are being turned into commercial centers, which is where you then build the capacity of Prasa to generate income through the station. They are no longer just a station where people are waiting, but they have become commercial centers with retail stores, with office parks, and with residential areas. And I remember that the CEO as a proper even mentioned with the target mainly students to ensure that it is easy for students to commute, because there is also a challenge in South Africa of student accommodation. What I wanted to be inserted in the last second paragraph of journey to Pretoria to Johannesburg is that what I said about the United Commuter Voices, that they were concerned about vandalism and were teaching commuters about taking care of cancer habits. However, this was not verified, as the oversight visit did not include a visit to United Commuter Voice offices to assess the training programs offered and interact with commuters trained by UCV. And then I'm saying a follow-up will need to be made to assess the impact of UCV services to commuters and travelers. On page 7, okay. I think there is really good that you can say about this project in this part. What was said about this was that this project relates to poverty and unemployment. Child. Page 7. Trust. And it targets poor families around train stations. And they form them into cooperatives and provide them with the opportunity of cleaning stations. and it was said that the project is at a pilot level, where only primary cooperatives have been informed that are gaining the patients. And they indicated that they have identified plumbing, painting, and electrification as their next phase, as well as setting up a secondary. So the other thing because to establish a secondary cooperative that would supply primary cooperatives with cleaning, such as equipment and consumables, such as the bin bags and toilet paper. So they are opening a market, but they are responding to neighboring communities and identifying poor families in those neighboring communities, which to me in the long run can also impact on reducing liberalism that takes place, because those communities then can begin to see the benefit of having a transition next to them, other than just using it for commuting purposes. Is there anyone who wants to add anything on page 7? Page 8? Page 9? Page 10? To me, under findings, when figure 3, when we are saying, however, the committee noted the following areas of concern right at the end. One, communication with passengers needed to be improved, and two, the lack of appropriate skills to sustain the industry remained a concern. Then three for me, which is the issue that we raised there, is that the union courage and work on would have been a strategic investment if it was acquired by a state-owned entity, as is the case in the Chinese model. Remember that we were told that a union courage and wagons was acquired by a consortium. And we were also given the background of how the union wagon and courage was established during the apartheid era. But it was established, it was a project that was driven by government, its establishment. But now, when we are positioning the railway transportation as the form of transport in South Africa, we allow the situation where the union courage is acquired by a private company, and we are not positioning the state-owned entity to acquire that and also take advantage of the infrastructure development, particularly the railway infrastructure development, is not only taking place in South Africa, it is taking place in the entire continent. And it would have positioned South Africa well if we had done that. But we are then coming back to that recommendation, like romantic three on recommendation. First, the Minister of Transport explore the possibility of creating internal capacity in the rail industry with the aim of creating self-sufficient and self-reliant industry. That leads to what you just said, but we did not say it on the finding. Are there any other issues? Then at the end, we can then bring in the how we are commending the progress made by us in conclusion. And then move to the second report. Thank you.
Well, for me, it's just on page 1 and 2. It's the historical backgrounds. But on page 2, also, I appreciate the number of directors that they have created since it has been constituted from 3.2. I'm not sure where do we bring in. You see, you always raise the matter that the allies of South Africa are meant only for those who in good ports. They are unlike the other modes of transport, which are seemingly affordable, irrespective of who you are. That's my generic statement. Was, it's only for those that who can afford. Was the pricing of our airlines to an other person. It's very expensive. Yet, we understand that it competes with the international world when it comes to airlines. So saying this matter that you are always raising, I would have thought that it will feature also here. I'm not sure how to bring it in. But I do have that in mind, that for the disadvantaged communities who are unable to access SAA and other modes of transport close in the air, it's a dream to them. I'm not sure whether it fits here, but in terms of the visits, and I've looked into the observations and the recommendations, I don't have much to say, because that's what we're not tired.
Yes. Let us start on job creation and poverty reduction as an issue of how APSA responds to that. Most of the retail space is occupied by well-established companies. And SNLE and cooperative is not in the vocabulary of us. Even their security services are given to these companies. So there is, APSA has no focus on promoting SMMEs and cooperatives. Even the space, the retail space at the airport is provided to well-established companies. Even if even the service of the PNG, the base, is monopolized by one company. The same company that rests in OR Tabo International Airport, Cape Town International Airport, and Durban International Airport. So the issue of dealing with inequality, fighting poverty and unemployment, and promoting cooperation is not a aspect we're focusing on. But also the ticketing structure closes the door for low cost airlines. And that is what needs to be worked out. Then on the issue of when we talk about key observations, particularly from 4.3, 4.4, and 4.5, I think we need to add 4.6, because other than the long walking distance at airport and also the bottleneck and security gains, I think that the customer relation that was built around 2010 did not continue in our effort after 2010. The friendliness displayed to our passengers to airport by airport cars does no longer exist. You would wait, particularly as a security gate, while they are talking among themselves and not even noticing you that you are there. And even if they are providing you with the service, they are not, their body language doesn't indicate that they value you. You are just, you are there, they are checking your bag. And whereas during 2010, there was an effort made to make the people who are using our airport feel welcome to use the airport. But after 2010, that spirit disappeared. Particularly on our own airlines. The kind of reception that you get from the British Airways is different from the kind of reception that you get from the South African Airways. And that is what needs to be followed up in terms of training and making sure that we operate under what should be people first.
I don't have a problem with this report and what it says. I have a problem with what it doesn't say. Now, you make a good point by touching on ticket friction 3.3. And there's an explanation as to the breakdown of airports and airline landing costs. Depending on who you believe, our airports are either amongst the most expensive in the world, which inhibits tourism, and that in itself does not help us at all in creating jobs for people who otherwise would be arriving and spending their euros or their dollars in Angolan currency, money in our country. If you take the argument that has been put forward by ACTS over the years, they will say that their costs have something to do with recovering the expenses they were forced to incur in 2010 in building these airports in the first place, but that in any event they would have needed to put up the cost at some stage because we needed to expand our airports. So whether it was 2010 or later, 2010 merely accelerated expansion that had to take place anyway. They further argue that compared to the actual ticket price, which is governed mainly by the jet fuel cost, the actual airline landing costs, as properly interpreted, are a very, very small proportion of the total cost that the airline passenger faces, and therefore can't be the main reason for our airports being that expensive, or at least inhibiting people arriving. So you have two arguments out there, and you'll remember that the Minister of Tourism has taken a fairly tough line with airports and airlines, particularly SAA, on this very issue. He's weighed in on one side of the argument. Now, I would have thought that this was probably the most important reason for doing these other side visits. And it is referred to 3.3, but it doesn't come through in number 4. There's no conclusion, there's no preliminary type of finding that we make, but neither in observations nor in recommendations. And I think that's a fairly big oversight. And before I can support the adoption of this report, I would really like that delegation visited ORT to make some kind of observation about what they think the correct interpretation of the facts are and what they therefore recommend. Because without that, it's like, I can't think of an appropriate example, but the central challenge and the central question hasn't been addressed, and everything else is, although it's important, it's not as important as that single point. So, if possible, could we at least have a discussion or maybe an insertion which we can discuss and then look at a report for adoption? If I'm not voted, that's fine, that's what the priorities are for, but I really think the report is lacking without that interpretation and finding.
I think that's what we are here for today, to bring that up, because That was the purpose of the visit. The visit was also about making air travel accessible to all, and also relating air traveling to tourism, to job creation, to reducing poverty. And this report doesn't actually speak to those main issues. And we are here to actually remind ourselves that what was the purpose of the report, and what direction we want ABBA to take, and what are the challenges that we want to address moving forward, because this report is not the end, it is the starting point for us to effect change in air traveling. And air traveling has been a source of dissatisfaction in the transport industry, in the manner in which there has been very little progress to transform that transport mode, other than building a new airport. But the service itself, given it, does not speak to economic development that would come as a result of increased tourism. It also doesn't speak to social development that comes through accessibility of a travel by all, not a particular class within the society. And I think that issue has to be related, the cost of travel. The cost pressure, because when we were AFSA in the boardroom, our discussions were mainly around that. We spent more time in the boardroom with AFSA than moving around over the summer, because the main issue was, one, low fare airlines have been liquidated in our country. They don't make it. Air travel is still a business of the rich. Meaning that there is no universal accessibility of air travel. And then the arguments that are put forward by AFSA are arguments that we do not share a common perspective with them. And that is to come out in the report that we don't share a common perspective. And the issue of what we observed as the service that is already provided there, the retail space who occupies it, the security services, the efficiency of that, the bottleneck, those are part of operations, but the main issue is not necessarily the operations, it is the availability of, it is positioning air travel in the same way that we position other modes of transport, to say transport is the heartbeat for social and economic development, and aviation is not playing that part of social and economic development at the moment.
Okay, thanks. Just that I understand the report. We speak in 5.3 about the absence of a transformation policy. I'm not sure what that means. Is that a type of employment equity policy you're talking about, or is it a transformation in the sense that there should be greater space for low-cost airlines? I'm not quite sure what kind of transformation you mean.
The absence of transformation policy, in my view, is that we define transport as the heartbeat for social and economic development in our country, in the transport. And aviation is the transport mode that needs to also play that role of transforming social and economical conditions in our country. And we are saying that there seems to be no transformation policy that leads to that. It's unlike transfer. other than that we have built new airports, we have a good system that, what is it, the system that you are now transporting to other groups, but in terms of providing a service that transforms our society socially and economically, increase our tourism industry to aviation mode of transportation, making that transport mode more accessible to the universal access that we are not touching. Passengers in all airlines do not reflect the demographics of the country. They also do not reflect that we are in Africa. Most of the people who are able to travel through the in terms of countries, less may be those that are and those that are in the meaning that we cannot transport aviation to make aviation accessible, irrespective of class, race, and geographical location. So our airlines are not flooded by people from Africa to put that who are in the African continent. Most of the passengers and the people that you find in our airport are from other continents, either the East or the West, not the African continent. Very few are from the African continent. And those that are there from the African continent are actually from government employees or business people, meaning that aviation is not accessible to all. And what is the problem that we need to be responding to make aviation accessible, to address social issues as well as economic issues?
I understand that that's asked the question, so I could be sure that I understood what you meant by transformation. That being so, I think everybody accepts that a low-cost airline or low-cost airlines is in the broad interest of the objectives that you've been spelling out. What's not clear in my mind is what AXA's role is in that. Because AXA's mandate is to manage the 9 principal airports, and it's in this report, that's what it is. And that is in fact what their role is. I don't know that a state-owned company whose mandate is to look after airports and make sure the airports run efficiently and they're cost-effective, and they encourage tourism, has got much to do with the establishment of low-cost airlines which can help transform the industry and give poorer people greater access to air travel. That would seem to be something which falls more in the purview of the Department of Transport itself than one of its entities. So is it correct for us to actually charge AXA with that responsibility when, to me, it's way beyond their mandate? I mean, they're supposed to provide a service which puts passengers through quickly, safely, efficiently, and in comfort at the lowest possible cost. It's not for them to make sure that low-cost airlines are able to function. And it would appear that the biggest problem there is SAA, because SAA runs a huge loss, subsidized by taxpayers, and they don't charge a market-related price. And for any low-cost airline that's privately owned to try to compete against SAA effectively, they're competing against the state, which is fundamentally unfair. That's the main reason why they go out of business. Because we make sure that SAA can run a loss that are officially low prices. The other companies don't have taxpayer support. So it would appear that the problem which you have identified correctly, in my opinion, is one that rests probably with state-owned enterprises, that portfolio, or as an entity, the Department of Transport. But I'm really unclear why it comes across in this report in the recommendation that it is AXA's responsibility to transform the industry. Surely it cannot be that. Lowering landing fees by 20 or 30% is not going to make one time or Jetstar or any of Flexstar, any of these recent airlines that have gone under. It's not going to make it profitable.
Can I read the recommendation?
Yes, sure, I'm finished.
The committee noted that the challenges posed to aviation industry due to the absence of a transformation policy, it recommends that the Minister of Transport ensure that the Department of Transport and ASA work closely on formulation and finalization of a transformation policy for the aviation industry. Yes. What we are saying here is the Minister of Transport, the main principal, and where does that operate? The entity that is charged by the Minister of Transport to actually look after those is ASA. And ASA has got more information to us, even if it would mean that the entity that has to respond is public enterprises. In the same way that we have listed in the previous report, what needs to be done by Transnet. Because the observation is made from our point of view, we are responsible for transport. And we are one government. It's one government. Even if it is the Department of Public Enterprises and SAA, but it is the responsibility of the government and it is the responsibility of state-owned companies, not just one company. If the problem needs a solution that will come from SAA, and SAA is a company, by the way, that utilizes the airport. Yeah. The company that utilizes the airport doesn't belong to SAA. The airport belongs to our government. And the entity that is charged by government to look after that space is us. So the starting point would be AXA. The observation will come from the Portfolio Committee for Transport because we are responsible for ensuring that there is efficient and accessibility of aviation mode of transport to all. And SAA will not worry about whether the other airlines are the low-cost airlines are making it or not. It is us who are in transport that have got that responsibility. And the information we will get from AXA and the Department of Transport as to what is the problem, and also we will make our own observations. And we will go to other countries and find out countries with similar challenges and find out how they dealt with this particular problem. The challenge here is that we have not been to any country to study what, how they responded to these challenges. But on rail and transportation, we did go to the country and we did do our desktop researches to actually identify the most appropriate country for us to visit. And all the recommendations that we are making, Professor, are related to the study tour in China. Because we're there, we saw a country that has similar problems and that has responded to those problems in a particular way. That is our situation. With aviation, we are at a problem identification stage.
You have covered me, and I think we are happy because we are just elaborating on this recommendation. So we are whispering next to me, but who else are touching me now? Not active. We are Muslim, no one in a family.
So we then insert to those amendments and then come back and consider the report. And if we are ahead with all the amendments, we can then adopt the report in our next meeting. Can we then look at this? I have received a letter from Honorable Olive, where he is requesting that in our program, because we have a short, I think, he is proposing that in our program, we also include the issue of actually request a meeting with the minister, for the minister to bring the portfolio committee on three problematic areas in her portfolio, namely the road access of the same October, December, and January, and plans for the ITAP road safety campaign to prevent serious crashes occurring again. Second one is rail safety and the causes of the recent train accident of Tracker and Sotolosa Rail train. And then the third one is the Sunrail problem, including the e-toll billing prices, the security threat, the Sunrail offices, and the financial stability of Sunrail at present. I personally agree with this proposal. But I however think that, and also I agree that they should be included in this term. But in terms of point one, I think that we should benchmark that on the Millennium Goals. Because the December, January, it relates to the targets that we have set for ourselves and also how we respond and the progress that we are making on road safety. So it should not just be the December, January date. It should be the road accident, including all, so that we can begin to see whether our intervention is effective enough for us to achieve the target of reducing the deaths. On the second one also, I would want us to put that in relation to what Honorable Olis was talking about in the beginning, value for money, because in railway we have spent a lot of money to improve the railway infrastructure with the new station and all other things. And if there is still an issue of train evidence, we then need to relate those train accidents to the investment that has been made in improving the railway transportation in our country, as well as the Sandra. We also need to do that within that context. Yes, there are these problems in Sandra. How do they relate to the mandate of Sandra and the investment that has been made? And are we getting value for money? And is Sandra operating within its mandate? And what are the interventions that are being proposed to improve the situation in relation to these problems that have been identified? I'm trying to open this hope for that. Honorable Olympus identified indicators. But we can't only speak to the indicators of problems. We must speak to those problems in relation to the targets and the program that we have set for ourselves. So, let's honor the book.
As I agree, Chair, as I would put the only students, another point is maybe there's an addition to the agenda before the program. Because I know we want to squeeze it. One is around the issue of the IPTS, the process of the IPTS for the most of those passes of 2010. And also this matter was a serious concern in IPTS with one reason pass in the national damage. It is alleged that there's no funds to continue the program. Passes are not moving. There are people who are hopefully paid for the work that they are doing. So I'm saying this matter of the IPTS, out of love that maybe other areas also. It's a great for other time, but I would like to raise as a matter of an item for the agenda, what is going to be before your eyes.
Yeah, we I think that there's another issue that we can add. We can't sit here as a committee to adopt, to amend our program. It is work that will be done by myself and the management team. We will then bring back an amended program to our next meeting. If that is acceptable, I will then close the meeting.
Good, Chair.
I'm saying that there are these proposals that have been made by Honourable Olive which need to be included in this, as well as the proposal that has been made by Honourable Sook. I am then saying that we can't be here as a whole committee to amend the program. I am therefore saying that I will go away and meet with the management team that we work with to develop a program and then bring it back, having included these items that have been proposed by these two members as part of our program.
I don't know who the management team is, so perhaps you could just tell us. I'm sure that's fine, but
the management team is myself, the committee clerk, Honourable the researcher, and all the people that we work with who would look at various issues to see that there is time for that.
Sure, that's fine, Chair.
And the parliamentary liaison officer. Which represents the minister in the committee, because they will then be having a diary that says what is the minister's availability, so that we can then slot the dates according to the availability. We will be looking at everything when parliament is open, when this is happening, and then slot those items according to that.
That's fine. Just like to raise a point that's very similar to this. You'll remember last year we convened a meeting with some of the stakeholders in the aviation industry to look at issues involving SAT in Gauteng and forward planning for additional expected air traffic and what the relationship would be according to that and existing airports and their expansion. You will have remembered that some of the people who came to the meeting after having found out about us also wanted to have their say, and they were essentially reacting to the main stakeholder that we invited. I've subsequently had more of the representatives of those associations, including the aircraft owners and pilots association, AOPA, the controlling body of owners of airports, and former senior ATNS people all said to me, we did promise them a follow-up meeting, they want to take these issues further. And why was the draft program that did include that meeting not followed through? So I don't know the answers to that. I said I would raise it today. I said that if the committee has committed to a follow-up, then they will do it. It's a question of programming and timing. Obviously, we have a very full agenda, so we can't necessarily expect everything to happen tomorrow. But you know, it has been some time, and they're asking me when will this process be completed, because they believe these issues need to be discussed by the stakeholders in the parliamentary portfolio committee where ultimately the decision will be taken. So I don't know whether there's any information you could impart to us. Or maybe I can tell them that we're looking at the draft paragraph for this term, possibly even the term after that, so that we're depending very much on the new parliament. But I'd like to go back with something to them. Even if it's just the management committee, as you now called it, is looking at all these issues and will advise as soon as possible. And if there is something more definite, then that would help. But I can't say I don't know. I think we should have some kind of idea. I'm finished. I just wanted to bring through my micro as well.
Okay. That matter is no longer a matter between you and them. As much as it was raised in the portfolio committee through your office, the constituency office, it is now a matter between the portfolio committee and those stakeholders. That is the first thing that they need to do. Which means that they have every right to write to the chairperson of the portfolio committee and ask for the follow-up meeting. Okay. That is the first issue. The second issue is that the work of parliament is continuous work. If we do not find space to make a follow-up on any issue raised, when our term of office ends, we write a legal report and recommend to the incoming portfolios that these are the outstanding issues that they would need to look at.
So we all know that this year is a short year. We can't conclude all the issues that we have raised by people. The most important thing is that the issues that have not been discussed by the portfolio committee, like these issues that have been raised by Honorable Onis, get into the program so that we can then make a recommendation in our legacy report of what issues need to be followed up by the new portfolio that will be established after the election. And that issue, if we can't find space to have it followed up now, we will then respond to it in that way. Which is why it is important for them to write a letter to the portfolio committee chairperson, because the portfolio chairperson has got an understanding of how those issues get wrapped up. So, if then they ask you, tell them that that matter, if it cannot be fitted here, it will be part of the recommendations on the legacy report. And they are free to write a letter either to me, so that we can keep that in the file, and also to write to the new chairperson. Because if they have, I will write also back to them to say this is what is going to happen, because it is no longer a matter of the constituency office, it is a matter of a portfolio committee and those entities. So that it is on the file. It is then looked at by the incoming portfolio committee. If you can't find space, we are not going to be here for a long time because we have, it is election year. So we are not going to be able to finish everything, but we will then incorporate everything that needs to be followed up in our legacy report.
Sure, that's absolutely fine. You've mapped out a procedure and a process. I will write them and give them your contact details, and we'll take it forth. That's all I needed was to know how to take the match. It's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Together, you can go.
Press conference. I have evidence.